T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Assessing a person's legal matter often requires extensive interviews, review of contracts and documents, and research of the current state of the law on the issues involved. As a result, the information provided by the attorneys and guests of All Things Legal is given for informational purposes only. It is not to be construed as legal, tax, investment, or other professional advice. Communications with the attorneys on this program, whether verbal or digital, do not create an attorney-client relationship.
Good morning, Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, All Things Legal. On this Memorial Day weekend, you give us a call at 260-1870 or text us at 870-870. You got Albert Nico this morning.
Hey, I got Doug Cinceri this morning.
That's right.
Too.
Memorial Day weekend.
I hope everybody's awake and you know, the basketball game was over. The LSU's out of the SEC tournament.
Yeah, well,
so
you know,
I don't know that a lot of folks are getting up and cracking open their radio this morning, but hopefully you're all listening to All Things Legal.
Unfortunately, LSU's pitcher Johnny Holstaff, better known as entire staff, had to pitch the last 2 days, and they were just worn out.
Yeah,
they actually played 6 games. They played Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. But they played 2 games.
One of them was a 17-inning game, right?
That was 2 games. That was a doubleheader. They didn't plan on playing doubleheader.
Yeah, and then had to turn right around the next day.
Right, beat Auburn.
Yeah.
On the walk-off.
Eight hours.
Wild pitch.
Walk-off wild pitch. That was bizarre.
But
that just happened with Georgia. Yeah, they had a walk-off. It was some sort of crazy play that they scored a couple of runs.
I'm glad. I'm not. It really really begins next week, and I think LSU played itself in the position to host a regional.
Right.
You know, when you beat the number 4 team, coming off a 17-inning game, with your that was a walk on pitcher starting, which
right.
was Clay Moffitt, whose dad was the strength coach for LSU.
Okay.
And I think you're pretty. You should make the top 16, no question about it. And when LSU does play a regional there, they've won 21 out of 25. Plus, they sell it out, make a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so hopefully, LSU will be there. And if they are, I'll be there next Sunday. I think.
There you go.
There you
there
go.
You go
Tigers. So it really starts next week. And
right.
And I think Saints have mini camp.
OTAs.
OTA, we call. I guess when I was
still calling,
I still call it mini camp. OTAs.
Yeah.
It's what do you call it? What's OTA stand for?
Something team activities.
Yeah, outside team. Is it?
I forget what it was.
It's off-season.
Off-season team
mini
activities.
Camp.
That's what it is.
So, you know, you can't. I will say this: you have to talk about mini camp, but you really can't tell much about mini camp. You mm-hmm. can talk a little bit about the defensive backs and cornerbacks, maybe, but it's not it's flag football.
That's right.
It's all the
skill positions that are Well, you can see what kind of guys are in shape. You can see how their footwork is. You can see
you
how
can
they
see,
train.
You can
see their
year.
Intensity.
Yeah, I mean, you can see.
You get a little something out of it. You know,
yeah. Jared Cook, they said, is physically, he's big and agile. So. But you know, we'll see. But I don't buy much into it. In fact, before we grab, I'll go on the phone with Greg. I remember distinctly 14 years ago, in OTAs, might have been called mini camps back then. They were saying that Marcus Colston was a disappointment.
Oh, really?
Absolutely.
Well, there you go. It might have been because it was probably too hot. It was 90 degrees.
Well, he was just It's limited, but it's a step. Okay, well, let's go to phone lines. Let's go to law. Let's go to Greg's got a question regarding Homeowners Association. Hey, Greg, you on All Things Legal with Doug Cinceri and Albert Nico.
Hey, good morning, Albert and Doug. I appreciate you taking my call.
Uh-huh.
Look, I got a question. I'm having an issue with my Homeowners Association. I'm a retired accountant, spent 35 years doing audits on books and records. And what my question is that a homeowners association on the North Shore takes in about $500,000 a year in dues. And they recently went through a transformation from the developer to the directors. And to make a long story short, I sent the request in. I wanted to do an examination of the homeowners association books and records.
Okay.
And I went online and I found a revised statute under the Louisiana Condo Act that specifically addressed it. But there's a separate revised statute under the Louisiana Homeowners Association Act that does not address it. Mm-hmm. However, I did find under the Louisiana Civil Code under nonprofit corporations, which is what our HOA is,
right,
a specific regulation that states that any voting member can examine the books and records. Anyway, I sent certified mail to the registered agent 2 months ago, and it took them 2 months to get back to me. And they basically said that instead of letting me look at the books and records, they're going to hire a CPA firm to do and audit and just, you know, release the audit results, which that's not what I want to do. I want to examine the books and records. So bottom line, what my question is that, you know, do homeowners have the authority to request an examination of books and records?
Absolutely. Yes, they do. And okay, so to the extent, you know, they may be limited, but the fact is it's a nonprofit. You're a member of that nonprofit. You're paying into that that nonprofit, and those nonprofits have, as a member, you have a right to see the books and records. So, I mean, it's, and again, if you can always make a demand to do so, you know, there is an element of the public trust when someone sits on one of these boards. And, you know, listen, we represent a lot of homeowners associations, yeah, townhome, condos, all these types of different associations. And it's a thankless job to be on that board.
Well,
and what you also have is people that are on that board that are just, they were elected because they want to get involved, not because of their necessary expertise in running and operating an association in accordance with
a lot of times they're elected because they're the only person who ran.
Well, that's right. And so, yeah, and they're not getting paid. And so I'm not taking up for them. I'm just saying that causes some problems because, you know, it makes it difficult as a one of the homeowners that's, you know, part of that association to get them to do what the bylaws and the declarations require them to do. So, but yes, you do have a right to see them. You could submit a letter, and if they're, you know, if they're saying, look, that's not good enough, I want to see them myself, you have to provide them for me. And then if they don't want to do that, you can have a mandatory injunction filed to where, you know, they're required by the court to do that, or you can just threaten to do that.
Let me ask you one final question. Since they've already denied my request, and this doesn't involve any monetary damages or anything, is this something that can be filed in small claims court?
Probably not. I think you're going to need to address it to the district court.
What parish are you in?
St. Tammany Parish.
Okay, yeah, you'd probably have to go to district court. Yes.
I went online and they said something about small claims court handled wards 8 and 9 in St. Tammany Parish, which is where I'm at.
Are you in Slidell or West St. Tammany?
I'm in Slidell.
Well, you might be able to go to the Slidell City Court.
Gotcha. Okay.
Well, look, and that's a little quicker. Yeah.
I appreciate your answer.
Okay.
So much. And if I need relief, I'll give you all a call.
Thanks so much. Appreciate
all right, Greg. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Linda's got a question regarding successions. Hey, Linda, you and all things legal, Dixon, Sarah, and Albert Nico.
Hey, I'm actually going to shift it more to the wills for an oligraphic will.
Uh-huh.
Can you tell me if the oligraphic will is signed and dated on every page and basically, you know, takes all the codicils prior to that and denounces all that? How can family members make it not stand up in court when?
All right. So an oligraphic will must be signed at the bottom, must be dated, uh-huh, and must be in the testator's handwriting. I actually had a client that came to me and wanted to probate what he called an oligraphic will, And he said, yeah, Mama was, you know, was there at the hospital, and, you know, she told me what to say, and I wrote it down, and she signed it. That is not an holographic will. It has to be written in the testator's handwriting. So what you would have to do then, if you want to try to probate that will, you would have, there'd have to be two people that were familiar with the decedent and the decedent's handwriting to come into court and testify. They can do it by affidavit. It needs to be served on all of the heirs, whether testate or intestate. And then those people have the right to appear at the hearing to challenge that the will was not valid, or the capacity of the testator, you know, whatever other challenges they may have to that will.
So then it would probably be difficult to disprove it as an effective will if it was in the handwriting of the person writing it. It would be pretty lock solid.
If it was not?
If it was, yeah. She's saying that if it was in her handwriting or his handwriting,
dated and signed,
then yeah, then if you got two people that can attest to it, that, you know, this was my mom or dad's, you know, their wishes, and this is their handwriting, you should be proven.
And why do lawyers then think it's best to go to a lawyer and draw up one then?
Well, I will tell you this. We have a lot of litigation over holographic wills, even if they're valid, because they will put provision. I call it Yogi Berra wills. You remember Yogi Berra? He used to say things like, you know, if you get to the fork in the road, take it. Well, a lot of those kind of wills say the same thing. You know, I'm going to give 50% to someone, 90% to someone, 20% to someone. And you're trying to figure out what in the heck did the old, what did they mean? What did they mean? So you have a lot of situations where wills that are well drafted at times can be interpreted two ways.
Right.
You know, especially when it comes to collation, reimbursements, loans, and that sort of thing. They can be well-drafted wills. Sometimes they have dual interpretations that you have to be very careful, and a good practitioner will try to avoid that. But a layperson will have draft a will that may have a lot of unintended consequences to it that would not be necessarily known to a layperson. But then when you try to interpret it, it could have several different interpretations. So, you know, a person works their entire life for their estate. And it's very important to them when they leave this earth that it goes where, the way they want. And to, you know, and to do a holographic will in a way that causes a dispute, that causes dual interpretations, that would cause issues, is that worth the risk for such an important decision? So. Right. I mean, look, people can do it themselves. They're going to give lawyers a lot more business by doing it themselves, because there's going to be so much litigation over these handwritten wills, because, you know, we've had to go 3 years of law school and 30 years of practice to, you know, sort of get a handle on how to do these things.
Well, and not to mention a notarial testament executed before a notary and two witnesses is self-proving. Probate means to prove, right? So you go probate a will, you go bring it to the court to prove it, that this was the testament of the testator. A notarial testament is self-proving. You file a notarial testament with the court, there is no hearing. You don't have to bring witnesses. The lawyer doesn't have to go spend time and money putting on a case for an holographic testament to be challenged by the heirs. This is the there was a notary there. There were two witnesses there. We already have those witnesses. This was already done in advance. So now you've saved that money to have to go to court and sit around and wait for your turn and prepare for the hearing and perhaps prepare witnesses to, you know, so you're going to spend more money at that hearing than you'll probably ever spend preparing a will, a notarial testament. So.
And then the next question really is, if you do the notary and get the will done by an attorney,
right,
what is the advantage to filing it in the mortgage office in advance of your death rather than just keeping it private in an attorney's file?
Typically, wills are not recorded because they would have no effect. What purpose would that serve during someone's lifetime? They don't take effect until someone passes away. So recording that document, there is no real reason to record a will. You know, and you can change your will. You can go back to the lawyer the following week, say, look, I want to change it. I want to leave it to Joe instead of Billy. I left everything to Billy instead of Joe. I'm changing my mind. So then you got to go back and record that, and it serves no purpose. You're not putting any third parties on notice of anything.
I got it.
All right.
Thank you so much. Sounds great. Thank you.
All right, Linda.
Okay, let's go to a break. Doug Sinteri, Albert Nico, You Weekend Lawyers, All Things Legal. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. We're back. Doug Sinteri, Albert Nico, You Weekend Lawyers. You know, one of my pet peeves is handwritten wills because they just cause a mess a lot of times. Sometimes they work. A lot of times they work, but it causes a mess. I mean,
I had one where they were trying it. You know, I couldn't tell if he was trying to grant a power of attorney,
right?
Or you know, leave everything to a particular. He had a brother and a sister, and he had an oligraphic will, and it was a copy of an oligraphic will, and it was just it was a mess.
I mean, if you did Yogi Berra's will, he would say 90%. You know, he said 90% of baseball is 50% mental.
Yeah, it's half mental, right?
And I've seen a lot of wills that say that. Just simple stuff like, okay, one daughter gets all my jewelry and someone else gets a ring.
Right.
And you're like, okay, what does that mean?
Right.
And so you end up getting a lot of litigation over trying to figure out what they meant. And a lot of times, again, we have to reread our wills to say, hey, could this be interpreted a different way?
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, you put a lot of context to it. So, all right, we're going to a CBS News update, and then we're going to local news, and we'll be back for the second half an hour of our first hour of All Things Legal. We'll be on till 10 o'clock. Doug Sinteri, Albert Nico, Your Weekend Lawyers. You know who that was? That was Sly.
Family Stone.
You remember them?
Dance to the Music. Absolutely. Yeah, that was fun stuff. I enjoyed that era of music.
That was funk. That was old school.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of old school funk.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm a big, big fan.
You went to the Paul McCartney concert.
Yes, I did.
How was it?
You know, he sounded like an older version of Paul McCartney. You know, he didn't have the 25-year-old voice anymore, but you know, they brought him up with the background singers, and it was great. I mean, it was just, he was entertaining. You know, it's amazing where these guys in their 70s, like, you know, say what you want, whether you like him, you hate him, whatever. Donald Trump, for instance, the guy's 72 years old. He's getting pounded and pounded and pounded and pounded every day about all these things. And he gets up, and where does he get the energy? And you say the same thing about Paul McCartney. He's like 75, 76 years
old. He's 76 years old.
Yeah, he's 76 years old. He played for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Took one break at the supposed end of the concert, and then it was an encore. But it was like not even a 5-minute break. And so I think he probably, you know, went to the restroom. I went to the restroom twice, you know. So, I mean, it was just, yeah. it's crazy where he gets the energy. But he told a few stories. You know, he played a little, of course, the older Beatles stuff. And he said, we're going to play some old stuff. We're going to play some not so old stuff. And we're going to play a couple of things, you know.
Off my new album.
Yeah. He did. He played two songs off his new album.
Yeah, I know.
It wasn't like it was a new album tour, right? And again, I don't think he needs the money, right?
No, he's doing he's probably okay.
In terms of promoting his new album. But
Yeah,
it was great though. I mean, he looked good. He got up there and played and sang for 3 hours, and it was just a lot of fun.
Well, I mean, it's sort of to see a Beatle in real life is sort of
it was
an
a bucket list.
Thing.
Absolutely, yeah. No, and yeah, everybody's singing na 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 na, you know, Hey Jude. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. A lot of people. Well, I was glad to see I was not one of the oldest people at the concert. There were a lot of older folks there that were there to see the. You know,
I remember one of
the lone Beatles.
I think in 1992 I saw Frank Sinatra at the Superdome, and he was like maybe in his late 70s. And I'm thinking it's probably be the last time.
In the Superdome? He played the.
Yeah, he played. They played in the basketball configuration.
Oh, okay.
Not in the middle, but in the head basketball. And he had like he always liked
doing around kind of thing.
Doing it around, yeah. Exactly. Uh-huh. And so, but I remember. Seeing him, I think he was probably in his late 70s, but they had monitors all around the stage with the words, just in case he got a little, you know, just got a little disoriented.
Yeah,
Well,
and I'll tell you a quick story about that, but getting back to Paul McCartney, so he plays a little Foxy Lady on his guitar, you know, the Jimi Hendrix, right? And so he then tells a story after he plays that. He tells a story about, he says he's in England and Jimi Hendrix was at a club in England. And so he said, we released Sergeant Pepper on a Friday. Mm-hmm. And he said, we went, and so he said, I think it was George went to go see Hendrix. Yeah, Jimi Hendrix. And he said, we released it on a Friday, this album, Sergeant Pepper. And on Sunday, Jimi Hendrix opens his concert with Sergeant Pepper. He said, like, he learned it in 2 days.
Oh, really?
And opened his concert, and he said, so how about that? Like, he was all proud that Jimi Hendrix, this legendary guitar player, you know, was playing Beatles music, you know? So it was just pretty neat to hear that whole dynamic, you know?
Yeah. I liked to watch Paul McCartney in the black and white.
They
films.
Played all that in the background.
Yeah, in a film.
And it was just, you know, these kids were just 20-something years old and had the world by the tail and had a blast. But real quickly, too, there's Billy Joel would play his piano, and if you look at the top of his piano, there is a little screen. And he said, you know, I went to Bob Dylan's house one night, and he said on his table was a book with all of the lyrics to all of his music. And he said, you know, yeah, I sometimes sit at a concert, and this was before the days of digital. And he said, and because I've written so many songs, I forget the words to my own songs.
Yeah.
But he was, you know, and then Billy Joel's right, you know, he's not 80 years old at the time. And he said the same thing. He said, I'll put the words up just because I've written so many songs, I don't want to forget the words.
It just reorients me.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right.
Let's go to Lee.
Yeah, I mean, when you try a case, do you have your notes, or you just do it off the top of your head?
Of course, yeah. I've practiced it over and over, but certainly I have my notes and
all
my
right.
cross-examination and whatever else.
All right, well, let's go to a phone call. Let's go to Lee. He's got a question regarding auto accidents. Hey, Lee, you and all things legal with Doug Cintari and Albert Nico. Lee.
Hello. You pushing the right button? Hello. There he is.
Hey, you there, Lee?
Hey. Yeah, I'm here. Good morning, gentlemen. I am lost and confused. I have a question. I was in an accident, and then 7 days later, somebody else hit me again in a rental car, and I'm not sure exactly what to do. The first accident, the gentleman portrayed like he had insurance. He didn't. So I was using my insurance to get my vehicle fixed.
Okay.
And then they gave me a rental car. 6 days later, a lady sideswiped the rental car, which I just got another rental car. So I didn't get an attorney for the first one, and I feel like I may have to get representation.
Well,
it won't be a problem for me.
All right, so let me talk. Let me ask you this: are you getting representation for property damages or personal injuries, or both?
It would be for both.
Okay, so. Between the first accident and the second accident, did you seek any medical treatment?
Yeah, the first accident, I went to the kind of hurt my shoulder.
Uh-huh.
I went and seen an orthopedic doctor, but that was it. That was all that was done.
So you went to see him in that first week?
And then you
got a second accident?
That's correct.
Okay, and in the second accident, you were injured in that as well?
Yeah, I'm on my back. Because what happened is, I was in the middle of the lane, and the lady came over on me, and she was pushing me into the guardrail, and I was fighting my car and her car
mm-hmm.
to keep them going into the bridge.
Right.
She had the
right.
world out of me. You just don't know.
Sure. And have you been to the doctor since the second accident?
No, I have not.
And how long ago did that happen?
Yesterday.
Okay. So there's two things at issue here. One is there's something in the law called a superseding intervening cause. So when you try to prove a case for personal injuries, okay, you have to prove that one of the things you have to prove was that the other person was at fault, but then you have to establish what damages that you sustained as a result of that person's fault. That person from the first accident can argue, well, those injuries were not caused by my accident because there was a superseding intervening cause, which means there was another cause of those injuries. So if you can keep your injuries sort of separated, where your shoulder was injured in the first accident, your back was injured in the second accident, it would seem that the treatment for those separate injuries would be able to be separated out. It becomes a little harder when you have a back injury and then you have a subsequent back injury. And now all of a sudden, you know, the two defendants in the case are going to argue, no, it was the result of the first accident. Look at the property damages. It's, you know, look at this, look at that. And, you know, look at his complaints to the doctor. And so there's a lot of fact question involved in handling the case. The good news is, assuming that you were not at fault in either of the accidents and the facts.
I wasn't.
Okay, then that's good news in terms of your ability to win the case, because you win on the liability side. Then it's a question of which of the two pays the damages. Look, Lee, call us at the office, 504-837-1304. If you have any questions, we can follow up with you on those.
All right.
Okay, thanks for the call, Lee. Let's go to a break. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, Your Weekend Lawyers, All Things Legal. We'll be right back after this brief time out. We're back. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, Your Weekend Lawyers, All Things Legal. We had a couple of texts. One was about minicamp.
Yeah, about minicamp.
Minicamp is organized
teams activities.
They used to call it involuntary, voluntary minicamp. Like, it was voluntary, but your rear end better be there.
You better be
there. But, exactly. So it's organized. You see, I'm out of it. I'm.
Yeah, well, you're still you know, lost in the 70s.
Stuck in the 70s and 80s. There you go.
Okay, this is a text. We're just about. It involves executors of an estate and the appropriate fee that the executor may charge. If the will does not state that the executor shall serve without compensation, or if the will does not set the compensation, the person acting as executor can apply to the court for a fee. The law states that the presumption is a 2.5% fee.
Mm-hmm.
However, that all needs to be approved by the court. So in other words, if you've got a $10 million estate and it's all in one asset, and all the executor did was place the heirs in possession of that one asset, 2.5% is grossly excessive.
$250,000.
In that
scenario for $10 million.
Right, that's right. And so it's crazy. So you would have to apply to the court for a fair, whatever's reasonable. In this situation, good morning. I heard you guys say 2.5% is a typical fee. I'm the executor of a friend of mine's estate, and the total assets were about $30,000. Liabilities are over $80,000. I had to clean out the house he was living in, move the stuff into storage, hold a garage sale, donate the rest to Goodwill. The big items are in storage and listed on Craigslist and other places for sale, and I had to deal with 28 creditors. Other than a few items that he left to his niece, which I have given to her, the rest of the estate is left to me. I have put in over 100 hours to date dealing with this estate. The attorney who is advising me said to set a reasonably hourly fee, which I set at $20 per hour, and that's what I've been paying myself on a monthly basis. Does this sound right? It has to be. $20 an hour sounds fair, but the fee has to be approved. So, in other words, if you're going to take the money to the detriment of creditors, the creditors may come in and say, wait a minute, number one, that's an excessive fee. Number two, the fee was never approved by the court. So what you should do on the front end is say, look, Judge, here's my situation. I want to set the fee at X amount. And is this fair? Can I be paying myself now for all of these services I'm rendering to the
estate? I think the difference is don't take the money until it's court approved.
Well, that's my point. It needs to be court approved. And so, you know, I don't know if the lawyer told you to do that or not, or if he just said $20 an hour is fair and you just decided to start paying yourself. But, you know, if you take the $20 an hour and for some reason the court comes back and says it's not reasonable,
then you're coming out of pocket.
That's right.
All right. Well, let's go to a break. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, Your Weekend Lawyers, All Things Legal. We'll be right back after this brief time out. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico. I wanted to ask Albert, you're the attorney for the New Orleans Hospitality
Louisiana Hospitality Foundation.
What is the deal with the bill with the crawfish that y'all...
I love the bill.
Okay, what's the bill?
The bill basically, there's a bill in the legislature right now that it looks like it may be moving forward to passage. That, and that's really more the restaurant association's issue as well. But there's some balance. Some of the restaurants don't like it. Some do. You have to have Louisiana, with respect to shrimp and crawfish, you have to state on your menu or on the door, if you don't have a menu, where your shrimp and crawfish come from, if they're whether they're Louisiana shrimp or Gulf shrimp, et cetera.
Okay, stay tuned for national news, local news. We'll be back in 10 minutes on All Things Legal.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.